Morning, everyone. We're going to start off with House Bill 2745. That's Kyle. We're going to have a short summary and then call up Representative Huffman.
So, no issue notice on minority report. Is that right, Kyle?
We're at that time of session, right? Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2745, the B version. I'll try to do a quick brief summary over it. What the measure does is it's allowing an intergovernmental entity that's created to operate, maintain, repair, and modernize transportation facilities that also qualifies for federal grant funding to issue property tax general obligation bonds, assess, levy, and collect ad valorem property taxes, including local option levies. And one of the distinctions, I guess I would just highlight between the intergovernmental entity approach and that of a mass transit district is with the intergovernmental entity approach and what's contained in the measure 2745 is it allows a different imposition of taxes in different areas based upon the demand for services, if you will, in different areas, where with a traditional mass transit district, transit property tax district, you would have one rate that you have to apply district-wide, where 2745 allows that rate to be different in different areas based upon the level of services and what provisions they'll be providing. So that's one of the key differences between the intergovernmental entity and the mass transit district. I think that's probably the high points right there, and there's obviously a number of things specified in the bill about how an intergovernmental entity goes about acquiring the authority, imposing tax, and such.
Representative Huffman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Haas and committee members, John Huffman, State Representative for House District 59, which includes a large chunk of Central Oregon, and I just wanted to put on the record in preparation for hearing 2745 that all of my local governments in Central Oregon have asked for this bill. It's at their request. We have worked really hard with them to provide, as staff mentioned, the flexibility. It's not a one-size-fits-all for the area, so if Sisters or Prineville or Madras don't want to participate at a higher level, they can adjust accordingly, and so they're very supportive of this bill, and I appreciate you all hearing it this morning.
Questions of Representative? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We have a team of people to follow Representative Huffman, Eric Kanzler, Karen Friend, Drew Hagedorn, and Doug Riggs, if you all want to come up.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Eric Kanzler here on behalf of the City of Bend and the Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council, which provides the Cascades East Transit Service in Crook, Deschutes, and Jefferson counties. Here to present some background on House Bill 2745 and ask for your support. So as alluded to by Representative Huffman, who is the chief sponsor of the bill, 2745 is supported by all Central Oregon cities. There's eight of them. For a large portion for all of them, frankly, one of the strong reasons for support is preservation of complete local control. This is a funding and governance model that allows flexibility for each community to make its own decision. So all in all, we've got the eight city support. We have support from the Chambers of Commerce, from all of the sort of usual transit advocate suspects, from the health community, from higher education, pretty much across the board. I think we have nearly 40 letters of support in the record under the bill for this hearing and no letters of opposition, at least that we're aware of. I should also state that, Drew will come up and say this himself, but the Oregon Transit Association broadly supports the bill as well. So procedurally, the bill was worked in the House Transportation Policy Committee and the House Revenue Committee. It passed out of each committee without objection and a due pass recommendation. It passed last week off the House floor by a vote of 53-7. At its essence, House Bill 2745 represents what we see as an innovative governance model for providing regional transit in rural Oregon. It would allow COIC, again, running Cascades East Transit in our Tri-County area, in cases where the local governments and the voters both supported, it would allow them to go to the voters and ask them to consider property taxes for transit services and also general obligation bonds for capital expenditures. So the taxes could be pursued region-wide. They could also be pursued, as staff mentioned, by zone. The bill specifies the manner in which a zone would be created and the procedures under which a zone would be established and taxes would be passed. It has a number of accountability measures in the bill, including the creation of local transit advisory committees, annual reporting requirements, local government collaboration, as well as statutory protections to make sure that the monies raised in each zone would remain in each zone and would be allocated only for the services or facilities that they were intended to be used for in line with the bill. So, for example, the City of Bend could work with COIC and it could establish its own zone, and the two parties would go through a collaborative process and work to assess the needs of the community, and ultimately, procedurally, COIC would make a proposal. In the case of, for example, of a local option levy, let's say it's a five-year local option, which might likely be the first thing we'd pursue. COIC would basically make a pitch to the city based on their joint work. City Council would give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. If they didn't like it, nothing's going forward. Voters support, it passes. And then all of the accountability measures come into place, the local transit advisory committee, so on and so forth. So why are we pursuing this model, of course, is a big question. There are some tools available already, and other options that have been thrown out would be a region-wide transit district. For us, that doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense because of the number of communities, the geographical area over which we're serving them, and the different makeup, the different size, and the different needs of each community. It's very difficult to find, perhaps impossible to find a single rate that would work and be politically accepted and appropriate region-wide. We could also pursue local transit districts, for example, one for Bend, one for Redmond, one for whatever city that wanted one, and do an elaborate procedure to contract for connector services. And again, remember, what we're trying to do is a regional approach. We want it to be integrated because our communities are independent on each other. So from our perspective, the latter risks fragmentation. The former just won't work and address the needs of the communities. What we're trying to do is find that really nice, fully accountable spot in the middle where the cities can come in if they want to, at the rate they want to, when they want to. And I should also say that this measure doesn't preclude any other funding mechanisms that might be in place. It works very nicely should the transportation package that's being proposed pass. I think the two would dovetail very well, and this has been discussed in that context as well, including to some degree within the public transit, bike ped, and public safety subcommittee as part of the joint committee effort. So I think I'll leave it at that. The bill took hard work, many years of hard work to develop. It's been a really collaborative local process, and again, it enjoys very broad support. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Haas and committee. For the record, my name is Karen Friend, and I'm the Executive Director of Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council. Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council is an intergovernmental cooperation formed back in 1971, so a longstanding organization. We have our eight cities, the tribe, and our three counties that we're an intergovernmental cooperation of. What we do is things that are done better on a regional basis for our local communities, and transportation was chosen as one of those. Back in 2007, COIC was asked to form a regional transportation system for Central Oregon, and in 2010 incorporated the existing Bend system into that system. Through the work that we've done, we represent cities as small as 500 to cities as big as 89,000, an area of 50 miles wide to 150 miles north-south. So we're providing transit service over a fairly large area. And as Eric alluded to, it's been a lot of work to develop something that worked for all of our cities and their varying sizes, and try to maintain the structure of the system that was set up to date. A lot of cooperation and collaboration has gone into this, and the local control and flexibility that this the system and this bill would allow was key to getting the support of all of our local entities. We're currently providing about 673,000 rides a year, so the system has really evolved in a very short amount of time. And in 2013, a group of community leaders came together to try to develop a governance and funding model that would allow for the stability of the system, and the development of this bill is what came out of all of that effort. So it's, as Eric alluded to, it's been a long effort on behalf of community leaders to try to come to something that would work for all of the cities and counties that we serve. Thank you.
Question. Senator Bocas?
No.
Sorry, that's okay.
Sorry.
Thank you, Chair Hass. I just wanted to clarify. So there's literally no opposition to the bill that you know of?
No, okay. We don't have.
Right.
I mean,
it was
a 53 to sure. Senator Taylor. Of course, the floor vote was 53-7. But in terms of stakeholder of write-in or oral testimony, absolutely no opposition that we're aware of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you volunteering?
No.
Go ahead, Doug.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs on behalf of the 9 Central Oregon cities. Eric for Maupin. Maupin is out of the Tri-County area, but is part of Jefferson County. And Denny Ross, who's the mayor of Maupin, would be remiss if I didn't mention Maupin. And I do think that really speaks to the integrated nature of what we've tried to do in Central Oregon over the last few years. You know, many of you have sat and listened to my testimony on the water management conservation program, mitigation conservation program that we have for water in the region. We've worked closely together on economic development, airport development, et cetera. So I think this is yet another example of the Central Oregon region trying to collaboratively come up with a solution. So I'm here today to share with you just a few points from Mayor Endicott's testimony. See if I can get the, there we go. Here's what the problem is, and Karen alluded to this. We have 150 miles between the northernmost, probably more if you count Maupin, northernmost city and the southernmost city in the region. And although Bend is the largest city with 89,000 people, and Redmond and Bend probably are the two largest drivers for job growth right now, the cost of living in Bend has gotten higher and higher. And many of the medical facilities are in Bend. And so if you are a low-income worker who can't afford a house in Bend, you may choose to live in Prineville, or you might choose to live in Madras. If you're a veteran who's retired to Madras, the only way to get to Bend is by transit in many cases. If you're a senior with limited transportation dollars, you may live in one of the outlying areas. And so the problem is we're trying to get people around the region in a more economical fashion. And that's, you know, we are growing, and we're not yet Portland, but if you're in Bend in the middle of rush hour traffic, you might feel like you're on I-5 in the Rose Quarter. That's how bad it's gotten at times. So what the region has done is really tried to look long-term and say, how do we get seniors, veterans, students, the workforce around? How do we potentially reduce the number of vehicles, you know, going into and out of town? And how do we do that in a way that makes sense? And that's, I think, what the next slide's all about. So as Eric and Karen pointed out, we could form a transit district. So we have this existing wonderful entity, COIC, which has been around since 1971, which is accountable to the people because there are elected officials on this board, COIC. And if the people in a city don't like COIC, they can elect new city council members, new county commissioners. So it's very accountable. So we could use this existing organization, or we could form a transit district. And so what Mayor Endicott put together for his testimony, and unfortunately couldn't be here today, was kind of a side-by-side. So the first line is, under a transit district, this would create a new bureaucracy. And that's something we're trying to avoid. We want to be efficient and use existing organization. A transit district would force the same rate on all cities. And I will tell you that trying to get the same rate in Maupin that is imposed in Bend would probably be difficult. I don't think the Bend folks want that, and certainly the Maupin folks don't. Again, a voting authority would have to make decisions on how this transit model would be set up. Under the existing model, we already have an authority that's accountable to the people, and under a transit district, it would set up a new, less accountable model. Citizen participation is something that's been raised repeatedly, and this model requires that the local city council have a public process, hold public hearings, ask for public support, take a vote in the city council, take a vote of the county for that matter. So public involvement would be very important. Again, I've kind of mentioned this, and a lot of these kind of are run-on sentences, but COIC is directed by elected local leaders. And so Karen, although she's the executive director, isn't really the boss. Her bosses are the elected city council members, mayors who come from Prineville and Madras and Redmond and Sisters and Bend and Lapine, et cetera. So that's very important. And then I think something Eric mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, each city will come in on a different timeline. So the way the state statute works is we'll first have to set an overall cap for the region, the most, the highest it could be for the region. But then each city would determine on its own schedule, you know, what makes sense for me. You know, right now it's a few small buses going from Madras and Prineville. And do we want to expand the number of buses? Do we want to expand the frequency, the size? You know, so Prineville wanted to come in next year, and Madras wanted to come in 2029 or 2072. They would have that ability, and they would not be imposed, have that tax imposed on them. And the last thing is citizen participation. This is something we heard repeatedly in a similar bill last session, and we wanted to make sure that citizens had the opportunity to be notified that their city was considering joining, that they'd have an opportunity to come testify, to get involved, to lobby their city council members, et cetera. So from my hat, representing all nine cities in Central Oregon, this is a good model. It's a governance model. It's about efficiency. It's about eliminating the need for a new bureaucracy. It's about doing the most with what we already have. So I think it's a great bill. I want to go back to the slide that was up, which shows the OLIS testimony. We could. Oh, there we go. Not that one, but no. This one. So I'd urge you to take a look at this list, and Eric mentioned it. I looked at it last night about 11:30 when I was preparing. It's a really impressive list. I've been doing this a long time, and I very seldom have seen such a diverse group of supporters, from businesses to educators to cities to counties to local citizens. Will people oppose this effort? Sure. You know, there are going to be people in every community who would oppose any expansion of any service that we provide. But I think that if you look at this list, you see the very broad spectrum of folks who've come out and said, I'm willing to put my name on a piece of paper with my logo because this is a great idea. So hope the committee can support it today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Questions of this panel? Senator Bircher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you go forward with this proposal and everything, what portion of the user fees would be paying for this program?
Currently in our system, our local bus services has a 15% fare box recovery, so they are paying 15% of the cost. In our inner city service, it's 24%. So that's currently the portion that the users are paying locally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Good questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Drew Hagedorn, did you want to weigh in from the Oregon Transit Association?
Thank you, Chair Haas, committee members. Drew Hagedorn appearing today on behalf of the Oregon Transit Association, testifying in support of the bill. I think others before me did a great job of outlining the policy components of the legislation. I'll let it suffice to say that the OTA's board reviewed this and unanimously voted to support it. We've been working in concert with the proponents over the last year or so to help develop the policy and work its way through the Legislative Assembly. It's just the kind of innovative approach that focuses on community coordination that we applaud, and indeed it's exactly some of the things that we've talked about related to transit through the work that the Joint Committee on Transportation Modernization and Preservation that is pursuing. So a good bill, and we urge your support. Thank you.
Questions of Drew? Thank you, sir. All right, that closes out our witness list here. We were in a public hearing and work session. Senator Boquist, I don't know if you want to discuss this or...
No, Mr. Chair. I want to move 2745B to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2745 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bircher.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Yes.
Chair Haas.
Pass votes aye. The measure, House Bill 2745, goes to the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Volunteers to carry it?
I'll carry it. Fine.
Senator Boquist will carry the bill. We'll close out that work session, and we will move to House Bill 2573.
I've got to create this. Okay.
opening up a work session and public hearing on House Bill 2573.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and we'll get the sign-up sheets here for you in just 1 second. House Bill 2573, it's really, there's two main components contained within the measure. So the first component is relating to business personal property tax filing for property taxes, and it's eliminating the annual filing requirement for the business personal property owners. It does allow a county assessor to annually provide a notice to each taxpayer whose taxable business property is not subject to ad valorem property taxation. And the key component here is if it's below the threshold. So there's an existing law threshold of $16,500. So a business owner within a county has property valued less than that, they do not have to file or they don't have to pay taxes on that business personal property. And so the first change is really about how that filing takes place, whether they have to file to the county assessor, or with the change in 2573, it's changing the requirement to the county assessor having the opportunity to send out a notice to business owners that are below that threshold or have been below that threshold in previous years to essentially have the business owner sign off on saying, yes, we still have the same amount of property and we're still under that threshold. So it's making some adjustments there. And the second piece is making a change to a property tax exemption, if you will, for manufactured structures that are also valued under a specific threshold. And it's for counties with population more than 570,000. So that would be Multnomah and Washington counties.
My district.
And in that case, it's increasing the threshold from what's in statute is 12,500 to 25,000. Now, that's indexed to inflation. And I should mention, so is the business personal property figure for the 16,500. But staying on the manufactured structure property tax exemption, the threshold is indexed to inflation, so the changes effectively in 2573 for Multnomah and Washington counties would be to provide an exemption for personal property manufactured structures that are valued for 2017-18, it was $33,500. So if the value of personal property manufactured structure is less than that, you will not owe property taxes on it. And again, those are indexed to the general CPI, so those figures do creep up each year. And those are the two changes contained in the measure.
Thank you. I see the dash three amendment here. You've written being permissive to the assessor.
Yes, Mr. Chair. That was one of the changes. That there was two amendments, and one was requiring the assessor to send out an annual notice, and the other was permissive to allow the assessor to send out the notice. And I think you'll have testimony from the assessors explaining somewhat of the importance of that and how different assessors have managed how they work with and contact their business personal property owners in their counties.
Okay. Well, let's start off with Jim McCauley.
So this, in theory, needs amended.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jim McCauley, representing Washington County, submitted testimony on this, which is essentially the same that we had done on within the House side. The brief history of this exemption is back in 2010, House Bill 3640 was supported by our county as well as Clackamas and Lane County. And at that point in time, it established a threshold of 12,500, which again has been updated through the indexing process to around 16,500. What our housing staff has basically come to realize over the time is that the economic recovery and the valuations have blown past the index updates, and this is a time to essentially make another update for just Washington and Multnomah County to bring that threshold up to essentially 33,500. What we have found over the time is about 35% of Washington County's units that qualified for that exemption no longer qualify, and we want to recapture that amount and also provide some additional protection from that housing stock that is important within that affordable housing spectrum. You're typically talking about the first opportunity to get off the streets in terms of affordability and potentially your last step before you go on the streets. So it's an incredibly important part of the overall spectrum of affordable housing. There is no opposition to this. This is both something that Multnomah County Commission and Washington County Commission have asked for. Lane and Clackamas decided to stay within the current framework and stay within that 16,500 cap for them. I'm more than happy to take any questions.
Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the, does the county have a number of how much revenue they'll lose on this going forward?
Yeah, Chair Haas, Senator Bertschinger, the estimate that we have for both counties is in the neighborhood of around $700,000 annually, $700,000 to $800,000. We're fortunate that we have resources within our respective counties' budgets to be able to handle that. And I think from our housing standpoint, it's probably the best $700,000 you can spend on affordable housing in terms of capturing that population base.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Riley, sorry.
Thank you. So just a comment. I think that Mr. McCauley is right. This is probably the best thing that we can possibly do with that $700,000 is keep some folks in their housing. As we know, people who don't have housing have a really much harder time getting work, getting jobs, and supporting themselves. So this is a really good thing for us to do, and I appreciate you being here.
Yeah. Thank you. Douglas Schmidt.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Douglas Schmidt, Polk County Assessor, testifying for the Assessors Association. I'm just testifying on the business personal property portion of it, not the manufactured home portion of it. Okay. We are fine with the amendment that was made to the engrossed bill. We have been working with Representative Gomberg's office, and I want to thank him on the record for working with us to make this bill more efficient to administer. Originally the bill had it, the assessors would have to send out a notice to every business personal property taxpayer every year, whether they had taxes that they had to pay or not. Some assessors send out an actual property return every year to businesses. Some don't. Several years ago, the legislature took away the requirement that we had to. And for efficiency purposes, some assessors don't mail out a return every year, maybe every 2 or 3 years, just to update those lower valued businesses that are, say, $5,000-$6,000. So what this bill does is it allows assessors, if they want to send out a notice to the assessor, to the business owner, that if they have not had any changes on their property in their assets, they can just sign that form and return it. If assessor doesn't want to do that, then the business owner just would not get a business property return, which indicates that they wouldn't have any need to file in that year. So it gives the assessors the option, and it basically gives us one more mechanism of contacting businesses. But if an assessor chooses that for their demographic and their county, they don't believe that letter is necessary at that time, then they don't have to send it out. And that's Representative Gomberg actually made that optional for assessors. And in this bill, what you have in front of you.
That was dash threes in the House.
Senator Haas, I don't remember which dash, which amendment it was, but I believe it was the latest one. I don't know if Kyle would have any information on that, but it is what is in this current bill is the amendment that made that optional for assessors instead of mandatory, which would have increased our costs and time. So we appreciate Representative Gomberg working on that with us. If you have any questions, I'll try and answer them.
Questions? I think we're good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2573A to the floor. Would you pass?
Thank you. Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2573A to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Richard.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Yes.
Chair Haas.
Hess votes aye. Measure passes. House Bill 2573 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do-pass recommendation. Senator Riley?
Sure.
Carry the bill. Close the work session on that and open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2088.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2088, it's making changes to what's commonly referred to as the change property ratio. So this is going to be dealing with situations, again, this is related to property tax, where an exception event takes place. And I have this in the SMS, in the background document, you can see what is prescribed as really an exception event property. And the general example you can think of is just a new property being built or an addition being placed on a piece of property, whether it's residential, commercial, industrial, what have you. But it's at that time when an exception event takes place. So let's say a new piece of property is built, determining the real market value, that's determined by the assessor, but then it'd be determining that maximum assessed value, the value on which the property tax rates are actually placed. How that's done right now under current law is you're using what's called the change property ratio, and that's a countywide ratio of the average real market value to the maximum assessed value for that type of property class. So if a new home is built, you would take the real market value of that that home, that property, multiply that by the change property ratio, which again is a countywide average for all residential property, and that's how you determine the maximum assessed value of that property. And again, that's important because the maximum assessed value is the actual value of the property to which the tax rates are applied. Now, what House Bill 2088A does is it allows cities that reside in a county with a population greater than 700,000, so this is going to be cities within Multnomah County, to, rather than using that countywide average ratio to determine the maximum assessed value, they can use the ratio based upon within their city taxing limits. And this can be important if, especially in the case of Multnomah County, where really that change property ratio in many ways is influenced heavily by the property values in a larger city such as the city of Portland, which may not reflect another city. And I know you'll have testimony from the city of Gresham, which may have a different real market value, maximum assessed value ratio. So rather than setting the map of the new piece of property closer to in line with what's within the city under the existing law, it actually reflects some of that countywide variation. So the change in 2088A, again, is allowing a city to adopt to use their citywide CPR, if you will, rather than that countywide. Now, for the countywide change property ratio, that would still be countywide. So if you're outside the city or if you're in a different city that doesn't adopt this, you would still use that countywide ratio, and it would include the change to the city that does adopt this. And that's important because over time that would, and this would take quite a bit of time, but it would have a tendency to increase the change property ratio a little bit higher, just that you're using a higher average for the countywide. And some of that is reflected in the revenue impact statement as well, talking about that this could really take a number of years before it would really even affect any things at the, even going out to the three decimal place. So it's kind of a long-term change in effect on revenue in that case. And yeah, we do have a revenue impact statement up that does talk about some of the variation. And I do have a background document that you see up on the screen, and this was in some case relating to earlier introduced version of the bill, which allowed any city in Oregon, not just within Multnomah County. So it talked about the different cities and some of their different ratios. And you can see Gresham is up there right at the top of what their difference is between using their citywide one as opposed to a countywide one. I'd probably leave it right there with the introduction. Happy to answer if there's questions on you.
All right. Let's call up Eric Chambers and Carol Rula from the city of Gresham.
Thank you, Chair Hass, members of the committee. I'm Eric Chambers, the Government Relations Director for the City of Gresham. We are very pleased to be in front of you today to discuss this issue. I do wish it were less complex, but I know this committee understands the complexities of property tax, and we deeply appreciate this committee specifically having interest throughout this session and in previous sessions of looking at these issues and taking the deep dive, and so thank you for that. It's my pleasure this morning to testify in support of House Bill 2088, create. As you know, most of the inequities and problems in Oregon's property tax system are enshrined in the Constitution. And so the transaction costs of trying to get at those problems and talk to voters about, again, a very complex issue is very challenging. A small number of the problems and inequities are actually in statute. And as such, the legislature has the opportunity to go back with the benefit of retrospect and address some of those. House Bill 2088A addresses one of those statutory inequities, and we're very excited about the opportunity to talk about that. To be clear, again, this is not wide-sweeping property tax reform writ large. This is a very small scoped issue, but it's still an opportunity to make the system operate more precisely and more fairly. When the legislature was attempting to implement Measure 50 in the mid-90s, there were a number of issues that weren't covered in the statewide measure that needed to come back and be decided upon. One of those was, as Kyle mentioned, how new properties would get an initial maximum assessed value, which is more commonly referred to and a bit indelicately as the taxable assessed value. That's how most people know that rate to be. And by and large, except for in the case of the Great Recession, those are going to be the same number in most cases than not. The legislature's approach to how that would happen, I think, actually makes a lot of sense, or would have made a lot of sense in the mid-90s. Essentially, the legislature said different economies are existing in different areas of the state, and a way that we can capture those different economies and make the system operate locally, are cognizant of those local economies, is to have those new properties come on at the average of the county, you know, recognizing that Jackson County and Multnomah County might not have, you know, the same countywide approach. What we've learned with the benefit of 20 years of hindsight is that even within counties, there can be dramatically different economies that are taking place. And as Kyle's graphic showed, in particular in Multnomah County, there's a substantial difference in terms of what we're seeing in the economic conditions and the impact that has on that changed property ratio. As you can see on this slide shows total residential market value in Multnomah County. 86.9% of the county's market value is in the city of Portland. And so what we essentially, and then you take that coupled with Portland's dramatically larger size, and what you essentially see is that by and large, the city of Portland's changed property ratio is Multnomah County's changed property ratio. This slide shows what that results in over time. The thick blue line is the Multnomah County change property ratio. The city of Gresham's line is the dotted green line, and that chasm will grow larger and larger and larger as long as we see these economic conditions occurring. Again, what's happening there is that Multnomah County is seeing real market value growth that exceeds other communities in the county. In fact, in some cases, dramatically exceeds other communities in the county. We have market growth, of course, in Gresham, but it's on a more stable, modest trajectory than what we have seen in the city of Portland. Coupled with Portland's larger size, that skews the ratio heavily over time. These two dramatic factors result in a pretty pronounced and unintended subsidy. I know that this committee, the legislature, has seen the home-by-home examples many times. What we're showing here are two homes with identical market values, both worth $366,600. One was built in 1980. The other was built last year in 2016. The 1980 home is paying has a taxable assessed value to real market value ratio of 81.3%, and so they have a taxable assessed value of $297,900. The 2016 home is paying at a ratio of 51.8% because that was the change property ratio when it was built, and it's paying at a taxable assessed value of $190,000. This is not atypical from what we would see in the city of Gresham. The average change property ratio in Gresham right now, taxable assessed value or maximum assessed value to real market value, is 75%. In Portland, again, that's much closer to 50% since their ratio is essentially the county's ratio. The county's ratio is 53%, which means that in a case like this, there's an $1,800 difference in the taxes that our average existing property owners are paying for local services and what newer or significantly improved property owners are paying for local services. It's a 36% discount. What would happen to this example if House Bill 2088A were on the books when the 2016 home were built? There would still be a modest reduction. The changed property ratio would have still been a little bit lower than the 1980s home, but at this point it would be a 3.2% discount or $158. So a lot more parity, or as we call it, horizontal equity within the jurisdiction, if we have the ability to compare to ourselves. The real world consequences of this, again, is an unintended horizontal inequity within jurisdictions. Our remedy is simple. Allow cities in Multnomah County to notify the assessor that they would like to have new properties come on the tax rolls at their own average instead of the countywide average. And again, as you saw in the LRO's terrific analysis on this issue, by and large, we see a really acute Multnomah County issue occurring here. On the residential side, four of the top six jurisdictions are in Multnomah County. On the commercial side, the top two are in Multnomah County. On the multifamily side, again, the top two are in Multnomah County. Finally, I think it's important to note this bill does not raise property taxes for any current property owner. This applies, as Kyle mentioned, to only new developments or significantly improved properties. And I also want to put in context that this is not a huge revenue swing for us. This isn't a giant windfall. We get about $27 million a year in property taxes. If this had been on the books in 2016, on the residential side, it would have been worth about another $33,000. The year prior, $9,000. For every $1 million of new development or significant improvements we get on the commercial or multifamily side, we'd see around $500 in terms of the revenue swing. So certainly has a positive revenue impact for the city, but we are also motivated by the fairness issue that this represents. And Carol is here. I'm pleased to speak to some of that as well. Again, House Bill 2088A is a reasonably small, very scoped adjustment to statute to remove an unintended and unanticipated inequity in Oregon's property tax system, specifically in Multnomah County, where the problem is occurring the worst. I know that we've worked very hard on the House side to amend the bill to accommodate to the greatest extent possible some concerns raised by the Assessors Association. I think Doug will speak to this, but I think we're all in a better place. They may still have some concerns, one of which I believe the testimony they have on OLIS today, kind of why cities, if we let a city do this, then will a 4-H district do it? You know, what's the difference between those jurisdictions? And you know, cities do share or do have a special condition in the Oregon Constitution under Home Rule. We are different than other smaller taxing districts, and certainly people identify within those municipal boundaries, I think, to a great deal. Again, thank you so much for hearing this bill today. Greatly appreciate it. We'll have Carol testify, and have both of us happy to take any questions you might have.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and committee members. I'm Carol Rula. I'm just a resident of the city of Gresham. And I first found out about the change property ratio and that new development would come on, and this new development in my neighborhood would be paying taxes on half their market value, whereas in my neighborhood, we were paying close to 80 or 90% of our market value was what we were paying taxes on. And that did not seem very fair to me. And as I found out more about it, Sue Ranella also emailed all of you last night because she couldn't figure out how to submit to the OLIS system. But she is another citizen of Gresham who's very, you know, we understand this more than most people do because she participated in a thing with the city of Gresham on why we have such revenue problem, and partly it's Measure 50 and the low tax assess rate that we had, but also the change property ratio and the skewing and what that does to the city's taxes. And the most important thing, though, is the inequity in the system. I know that they've been saying, well, you're going to have more inequity between cities. We already have inequity in properties on the property line between the city of Portland and Gresham, but we have inequity in the neighborhoods as well. And in my testimony that I submitted, I gave you three examples of houses that are right next to each other, one built in 1980 that is worth $275,000, that is paying property taxes of $3,400. A 1995 house, and I've found when looking at this, it's really houses built in the late 90s that tend to be in the worst position. The market value, $256,000, and that's $25,000 less in market value, and they're paying $3,600, so more there. But then the house built most recently that's part of the post-Measure 50 and therefore has this change property ratio determining its assessed value, its market value is over $300,000 and is paying less than either one, $2,700. So it's paying $700 less than that lower one and almost $1,000 less than the 1995 house. I know it's kind of hard to to see, oh, they have my numbers up there. I'm not used to testifying. I'm sorry. But I just wanted to tell you how important this is to equity and how much the citizens, I mean, I got up to come here a long way to be here because it was so important to me. And that Gresham and East County cities are some of the worst affected by what has happened with the change property ratio. And so I really urge you and I thank you for hearing this, and I hope this can move forward with a due pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol, for coming down. I hope your experience at the Capitol is user-friendly.
Thank you.
Questions of Eric or Ms. Rolla? Senator Burchard.
Just a clarification. So we're not going to unwind the clock for all the ones that it's just moving forward.
Chair Haas, Senator Bartsugar, excellent question. That's correct. This is, I like to say, there's no wrong time to start doing the right thing, but we are not attempting to go backwards and undo. I mean, I think that would be more of a conversation for the large scale kind of property tax reform question. This is just forward looking.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is not an issue that we're unfamiliar with in this committee. And we realize that it is a big problem, but it's a big problem statewide. And I think that one of the things that we need to continue is looking at, as we have been, fixing this problem statewide, and piecemealing it is, you know, okay, but we need to fix it statewide.
Tale of two houses. Other questions, Senator Buckwist?
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's call up Mark Garst and Douglas Schmidt.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Douglas Schmidt, Polk County Assessor, testifying for the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. We have, as been mentioned, we have had multiple discussions with League of Oregon Cities, different groups on this bill. The original bill was a statewide bill, and we oppose that. This bill is limited strictly to Multnomah County at this point. And at this point, we're still not pleased with the idea, but we are not standing in the way of this bill. What I wanted to, my testimony submitted says we do not support it, but basically we're neutral on this bill, where it's just Multnomah County and the issues that they have up there with some of the cities. And it is recognized that the city of Portland drives the change property ratio up there. I do want to thank the proponents of this bill. They have made some substantial changes to the bill to help us. They've limited it first to Multnomah County is almost a test area. They have added language that allows for compensation for counties who have to do conversion costs to rewrite their computer systems to take care of this. Right now, that's just Multnomah County, but that could be a big issue if this expands out to other counties. So they have put that in the bill at our request. They have pushed out the implementation date a year due to the complexity of programming and testing, which is very beneficial. And they have also, the original bill didn't have any provision for a city to 1 year want to have the ratio calculated by their city, and the next year they didn't want to because it might have been beneficial to them to have it both ways. I asked, or the assessors asked, to have in a 5 year window where once they come in, then they're in for 5 years and they put that in. So they have made some substantial changes to this bill to address assessors' concerns. So we're not opposing the current bill. We just have some issues that, even though it's in the future, and one of the issues that was raised is what's to keep other districts from coming in the future and saying it'd be beneficial to us to do this, and how will the legislature handle that? I have 41 individual districts in my county, and including small cemetery districts. So it's just something down the road that we will be looking at if this comes up to expand it out into other counties and how we address those issues. But at this point, we're not standing in the way of this bill that would be implemented just for Multnomah County.
Thank you.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Oregon Department of Revenue Property Tax Division. So the bill can be administered, and you know, we've spoke to Multnomah County, and they believe that this is something that they'd be able to do. On the policy side, the Department of Revenue is neutral on the policy, but I do just want to call out a couple items for your information as you make this decision. First of all, you know, we talked about the tale of two houses and inequity. I think everybody knows that there's a lot of inequity baked into our system. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the work that the Oregonian did, where they put together the map that showed winners and losers, and the winners were in blue, and mostly they were found in inner southeast and northeast Portland. And then the losers were folks who were generally east of 82nd Avenue and out into areas like Gresham. And so While this will increase some equity in the city of Gresham, within Gresham city limits, across the county, it will have the effect of further exacerbating the inequities that we see now. So the blues won't become any less blue, but the reds will become more red. The folks in Gresham will see that they're paying a higher percentage on average of their real market value in their assessed value. So that is one effect of this bill. Secondly, I just want to make sure that we call out that this does not apply just to new property, right? It's not just new construction. If you do new improvements to your existing home, if it's minor construction or if it's ongoing maintenance and repair, they call it, then that's not necessarily going to increase your maximum assessed value. But if you do more work, if you do an addition or if you remodel your kitchen, if you spend more than $10,000 in a 1 year, or $25,000 across 5 years, where you're doing more than just replacing like for like, then that will actually add to your maximum assessed value. And that gets multiplied times this change property ratio. So someone would have currently used the Multnomah County average, and they would have had the costs of that or the value of that improvement taken times the, I think it's 50 to 53% currently. Instead of that, in the future, it'll go times the closer 75%, which is the citywide average. So in that sense, it will, the folks who are benefiting the least currently from Measure 50 statewide, which are residents of the city of Gresham, it'll make things a little worse for them yet still. It does increase equity inside the city of Gresham, and we certainly understand why they're interested in this policy. And if I were an existing resident and I saw new houses coming in and they were paying a fraction of what I was paying for the same house, it would upset me too. So, again, Department of Revenue is neutral, but just want to make sure that all the information is out there and you guys have the, you know, best information we can give you on what the policy would be.
Thank you, Mr. Garst. Questions for the Department of Revenue? All right, thank you both. Thank you, Mark. I know you're in one of the two houses and you're a winner and you want to fix this.
Fair enough.
You damn right. So we're in a work session on House Bill.
Chair, I move House Bill 2088 to the floor A with a due pass.
Senator Bocas moves House Bill 2088 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, and clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bechtiger.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Yes.
Chair Haas.
Haas votes aye, and I will carry the bill. We'll close out that work session in public hearing, and we will open up a work session on House Bill 2779. You may remember this. It was a technical bill a couple of weeks ago we held a hearing and work session on. Did not have the documents, if I recall, but it was a technical change for the Treasurer's Office on collection of money. Mazen, can you give us a brief course?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have to say that your batting average today is perfect. Three bills out.
Don't mess it up, will you?
I'll try not to.
Somebody hit four home runs yesterday.
This bill had to do with the work of the state treasurer. I think the way they described it as align the statues to the practice. I think they meant to say modernize the statue with state-of-the-art practice. This takes, the changes between how you manage the local government payments and how you have allowance for the time period of when these payments have to be transferred, with the exceptions of counties, and then the second issue was about the reporting between the state treasurer and DCBS, and that. And then it took a while to do some of the amendments, and you have in the amendments that came from the House is the work group to look into the different issues. And I think at that time we had a discussion. Senator Boquist wanted to bring the focus that the deputy state treasurer is not in the statutory position, so that will not be appropriate to have that position get into the continuing education for the investment board. So the dash A5 amendments takes out that word, the deputy, which makes the state treasurer the responsible party for this educational program. So that's the amendment that we had for this bill. And still with the amendment, there is no fiscal impact of the bill, and there is no revenue impact on it as well.
Senator Boquist, are you satisfied with the A5s?
I'm Peachy Keen. Are you ready? Mr. Chair, I move the A5s dated 5/26/17 into 2779.
Senator Boquist moves dash 5s into House Bill 2779. Discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair, I move House Bill 2779 as amended by the A5 to forward the due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2779 as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Does the treasurer know what we're doing?
Yeah, they came and saw me.
Okay.
Yeah.
The treasurer is here. And
yeah.
Either that or all.
They're in the back row.
Or that representative of the state treasurer.
No, nobody's going to be surprised here.
Yeah, that doesn't look like a Tobias. Okay, I'm just pointing that out. Okay.
Not tall enough.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bechtiger.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Yes.
Chair
Hass. Hass votes aye. House Bill 2779 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Certainly, I got nothing else to do in the future.
Senator Boquist will be the carrier.
You
remain perfect.
Yes, it was a perfect game today. A no-no. We have a joint committee tomorrow at 8:30, tax credit committee on Friday at 1, and for now we'll not meet in this committee on Monday. For now, as a personal favor to Senator Burchard. And if we have no other business before us, we will adjourn.
Thanks, sir.
Before us, we will adjourn.
Thanks, sir.
Other business.